What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, I wasn't gone that long, but a lot actually happened while I was on vacation. By the way, vacation was awesome. Had a great time in Palm Springs. Smoked up a whole lot of weed. Went to some good-ass restaurants. And just genuinely had a good time. But a lot happened, especially in the NBA. Of course, we now have us a new NBA champion. And it just happens to be the Oklahoma City Thunder, who ended up winning in seven games. So we went all the way to a game seven. We did not discuss game six or seven because I was out on both of those recap days. But Oklahoma City, they were the best team all season. They had the best regular season record. They dominated from start to finish. There really was never a point in this season that Oklahoma City was down. And that's why they're the champions. And they did exactly what they were supposed to do. Meanwhile, SGA not only won the league MVP, but he also won the NBA Finals MVP because he did average 30.3 points per game in this seven games. And so not only did he win both MVPs, but that's very rare to win the NBA league MVP and the NBA Finals MVP in the same season. It doesn't happen often. So congrats to SGA because he also had a flawless season. He was easily the MVP. Yes, I know, Nikola Jokic had an amazing year, but it's just SGA was on the best team from start to finish. They had the best season, and obviously here they are. They capped it off with the NBA Finals win, as they should. And then in an unfortunate bit of news that happened in Game 7 of the NBA Finals, Tyrese Halliburton, he unfortunately tore his Achilles in the first quarter. You know, it was just right off the bat. And it was also just one of those injuries where you saw it and you're like, oh, God, that sucks. Because, you know, he was already coming in with a strained calf. And so it's not shocking that it just went down to his Achilles right after that, because that is usually what happens with these injuries. Normally, if it was the regular season, he probably would have rested up and just not let it get that far. But it's the postseason. And not only is it the postseason, it's the NBA Finals. This is what you play for. So he was willing to risk the injury. And unfortunately, the injury happened. So that means Halliburton's definitely going to miss at least half of next season, if not all of next season. Because, an Achilles injury usually takes about 9 to 12 months to heal up from that, and he's an NBA player, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. But I definitely will shout out the Indiana Pacers, man. Nobody thought they would go to the NBA Finals, let alone take it all the way to a Game 7, and that was just an excellent NBA Finals. I know the ratings weren't really that good, just because, it was Oklahoma City versus the Indiana Pacers. Not really big fan bases there. But as far as basketball goes, I thought it was just an excellent series between two good-ass teams who just played excellent team basketball, and it went seven games. There's nothing better than a game seven when you're talking basketball or baseball when it comes down to the playoffs. Then a little bit of extra NBA news that happened over the last week. Kevin Durant finally traded away from the Phoenix Suns. I think we all knew that was going to happen. It looked like it might have happened around the trade deadline during the regular season. It did not. But this entire offseason, pretty much Phoenix has been looking to get rid of him. And he was traded to a team that I think absolutely needs him. And I believe he's going to elevate this team to another level. And that is the Houston Rockets. I mean, they were already one of the top tier teams this year. They really obliterated everyone. To me, the Rockets were only missing that veteran championship presence. And yes, they have Van Vliet, but Van Vliet ain't Kevin Durant. I think Kevin Durant is going to fit in nice with this Houston Rockets team. As a matter of fact, I think he is the perfect missing piece to this Houston Rockets team. And I actually think the Houston Rockets are going to be I already thought they were going to be a good team heading into this year, but this move for Kevin Durant, I think, puts them in championship level talk. Because, coming off of last year, to me, this past season, Houston Rockets looked like last year's Oklahoma City Thunder. And now look where the Oklahoma City Thunder are at. They're champions. So I kind of feel like this Kevin Durant trade really elevates Houston. Now, the Western Conference is, of course, stacked. But with that being said, Kevin Durant, he's exactly what the Houston Rockets needed. Then another bit of NBA news. The Los Angeles Lakers have now officially been sold, and they are the most expensive team of all time. They sold for $10 billion dollars to the guy who currently owns the Los Angeles Dodgers. So this dude is balling uncontrollably. Man, you own the Dodgers, and then now you own the Los Angeles Lakers, two of the biggest franchises in their perspective or their respective sports. So congrats to that dude. You know, for me, I personally, I think it's going to be a good thing, obviously, for the Lakers, because this dude loves to spend money and he loves to win, and that's really what he's all about. But for me personally, I just always loved having Jeannie Buss be the face of the ownership and everything. Because, you know, for me personally, I'm a Lakers fan, but also I thought it was dope having a woman as the face of the franchise, the owner of the franchise. She's still going to play basically the same role that she's been playing with the team since her father died. She's still a part of the team, but for me, it's just I personally liked seeing a woman be the owner, not only of just like a franchise, but be the face of one of the biggest franchises in the history of sports. And selling for $10 billion right there says it all. But I'm glad Jeannie Buss is still going to be around to work with the Lakers. But I definitely think just, you know, the way this guy operates the Los Angeles Dodgers, I think as a Lakers fan, this is going to be fucking fantastic, because the dude has no problems spending a lot of money and making big moves. As we can see, as a Dodgers owner, I feel like it's going to be the same with the Lakers. Then we also had the NBA draft over the last couple of days. So I guess I'll go ahead and run down just the first round of the draft that happened on Wednesday night. So beginning with the number one overall pick, the Dallas Mavericks, what a shock here, ended up drafting Cooper Flagg out of Duke. I mean, obviously he was going number one to whoever was the number one overall pick. So the Mavericks ended up with him. Number two pick, the San Antonio Spurs, went with Dylan Harper out of Rutgers. Number three, the Philadelphia 76ers went with VJ Edgecombe out of Baylor. Number four, the Charlotte Hornets went with Con Knipple out of Duke. Number five, the Utah Jazz drafted Ace Bailey out of Rutgers. Number six, the Washington Wizards drafted Trey Johnson out of Texas, hook 'em horns, motherfucker. Number seven, the New Orleans Pelicans drafted Jeremiah Fears out of Oklahoma. Number eight, the Brooklyn Nets drafted Igor Demin out of BYU. Number nine, the Toronto Raptors drafted Colin Murray-Boyles out of South Carolina. Number 10, the Houston Rockets drafted Kamen Malach. I'm sorry, dude. I totally butchered your name, I'm sure. But he's also out of Duke and ended up being traded to the Suns. Then at the number 11 pick, the Portland Trail Blazers drafted Cedric Coward out of Washington State, who was then traded to the Grizzlies. Number 12 pick went to the Chicago Bulls, drafted Noah Esenge out of Radio Farm Ulm. I'm assuming that's somewhere in Europe. Number 13, the Atlanta Hawks drafted Derek Queen out of Maryland. He was traded to the Pelicans. Number 14, the San Antonio Spurs drafted Carter Bryant out of Arizona. Number 15, the Oklahoma City Thunder drafted Thomas Sorber out of Georgetown. Number 16, the Memphis Grizzlies drafted Yang Hansen out of King Dao. I'm assuming that's China or Korea or one of those Asian countries over there. He was then traded to the Trail Blazers. Then at number 17, the Minnesota Timberwolves drafted Joan Berenger out of Cedevita Olympia. I'm assuming that's also a European country. Number 18, the Washington Wizards drafted Walter Clayton Jr. out of Florida, who was then traded to the Utah Jazz. At number 19, the Brooklyn Nets drafted Nolan Traore out of St. Quentin something, so I'm assuming that's another European country. Then at number 20, the Miami Heat drafted Kasperis, oh Jesus Christ, Yekachunas, yeah, that's what we're going with, out of Illinois. Shockingly, that dude wasn't out of Europe. I was totally expecting some fucking European shit to come right after that, but no, he went to Illinois. Then at number 21, the Utah Jazz drafted Will Riley out of Illinois, who was then traded to the Washington Wizards. Then at number 2, the Atlanta Hawks drafted Drake Powell out of North Carolina, who was then traded to the Nets. Number 23, the New Orleans Pelicans drafted Asa Newell out of Georgia, who was then traded to the Hawks. Then at number 24, the Oklahoma City Thunder drafted Neek Clifford out of Colorado State, who was then traded to the Kings. Then at number 25, the Orlando Magic drafted Jace Richardson out of Michigan State. Number 26, the Brooklyn Nets drafted Ben Sarraf, another European thing I cannot pronounce. Then at number 27, the Brooklyn Nets drafted Danny Wolf out of Michigan. Then at number 28, the Boston Celtics drafted Hugo Gonzalez out of Real Madrid. Number 29, the Phoenix Suns drafted Liam McNeely out of UConn, who then was traded to the Hornets. And then rounding out the first round of the NBA draft, number 30, the Los Angeles Clippers drafted, Jesus Christ, the last pick had to be a fucked up name of Yannick Conan Niederhauser out of Penn State. So, sorry for butchering all those names and shit, but that's just what happens in life. You should have a better fucking more pronounceable name. So there's that. So that's what happened with the NBA while I was gone. Then this is more of a toot your own horn moment because my college baseball World Series prediction was Coastal Carolina versus LSU, with LSU winning it all. And guess what? The championship came down to Coastal Carolina versus LSU, and LSU won the championship, so I'm just patting myself on the back for that one because I pretty much just pulled that shit out of my ass, and I actually ended up being right, so what the hell on that? And then also in some other news that happened while I was out as well is in the UFC. The greatest UFC fighter, John Jones, ended up retiring over the weekend. You know, it was kind of up in the air if he was ever going to fight again. It kind of felt like he was teetering back and forth on whether or not he was going to come back. You know, they kept saying that he was going to fight, and then he just never did. And he just finally called it quits over last weekend or just a few days ago. Regardless, John Jones is now officially retired, at least for now. You know, with fighters, they tend to come back because, hell, Amanda Nunes is coming back, which I'm all for because I fucking love Amanda Nunes. But we'll see if John Jones ever comes back, but it doesn't really matter, in my opinion, if he does or doesn't, because he has cemented his legacy as the greatest UFC fighter of all time, and he doesn't have to prove anything. He doesn't have to fight anybody else. He has already fought the greatest of all time. He's already fought everybody in the ranks. He's won multiple belts at multiple weight levels. He has literally zero to prove, so John Bones Jones has officially retired from the UFC. Then I decided since we're close to the halfway point of the baseball season, which is just crazy, but we are almost there. I mean, next week is the 4th of July, and that's pretty much the halfway point. And then the week after that is actually the All-Star break. So I decided rather than doing the usual rundown of kind of recapping some specific games throughout this past week, I decided we're just going to talk about who's leading their divisions at this current point in time and who's leading the league and certain things. So let's start off with the American League and actually who leads the league right now still, who has been the best team for the majority of this season, and that is in the AL Central, the Detroit Tigers. They are 51-31 on the season, and they just have been mowing everybody down. They've been dominating everybody. They've even had to overcome injuries. Their starting pitching is solid. Their young players are playing well. It's just this Detroit Tigers team is playing excellent baseball, and they've been doing it at a consistent level to start the first half of the season. And right now in the AL Central, they have such a huge lead that they more than likely are easily winning this division, because right now Cleveland Guardians are in second place in the division, but behind by 9.5 games. So that's obviously there's plenty of time for them to catch up, but I mean the Tigers, if they keep playing at this rate, they are going to be the best team in the league. Then in the American League West, the Houston Astros, here they come. I told you this team, you don't want to see them right now. They have taken over the American League West. They were like in third and fourth place to start the season, but they've really just been doing what the Houston Astros do, and that's just get going, put together some good baseball. Their starting pitching is starting to get it going. They're 48-33 right now on the season, and they are leading the American League West, and they are just widening the gap. And all their dudes, they're putting it together. They're starting to get a lot of the veterans, Altuve, they're starting to get it put together. And this is just the team. You never want them to get going. And here they are, 6.5 game lead over the Seattle Mariners, who really were actually dominating this division up until about 3 weeks ago. And now Houston has a stranglehold on this division. And then in third place in the American League right now, actually leading the American League East, the New York Yankees, overall record of 46-34. This team, they've been very good for the most part. It's just they've had their moments of when they slump. And so they've had their moments, but for the most part, they've been one of the most consistent teams. Their starting pitching is really good right now. It's just the injury bug has hit them as well, so that's kind of taken the wind out of their sails. But, you know, they're still the Yankees, and they're still dominating their division. Although I will say the Tampa Bay Rays are now only a half game behind the Yankees in this one. I kind of feel like the American League East is always a battle, and it's going to continue to be a battle for the rest of the season. And then turning to the National League, the top team in the National League, of course, leading the National League West is the Los Angeles Dodgers. Overall record of 51-31. They're also like the Yankees, though. They have their up moments, they have their down moments, and they've been trying to overcome the injuries, which for the most part they have. But their division has actually been a battle, but they're probably more than likely going to continue to have a stranglehold on the National League West. Right now, the San Diego Padres are 6 games behind. The Giants are 6.5 games behind. So they have a lot of ground to catch up, and I just don't really see the Dodgers falling off that hard, unless Ohtani gets injured, something of that nature. But even so, they probably will still overcome it because they have so much depth, and they're just such a damn good team. Then the National League Central leading team is the Chicago Cubs right now. They're 48-33 on the season. They've been probably the most consistent team in the National League. They've had no issues scoring runs at all. And they just got Shota Imanaga back earlier this week. So they're bolstering up the starting pitching. Even though they've been able to overcome all these injuries, this team is stacked, and they look really good. Milwaukee is only 3 games behind them, but I feel like Chicago's just got a great grip on this National League Central, and I just feel like if they keep scoring at the rate that they're scoring at, that they're easily going to win this division. And then the National League East right now is led by the New York Mets, overall record of 48-34. However, the Philadelphia Phillies are right on their ass, only a half game behind. I kind of feel like it's going to be the Mets and the Phillies all the way battling it out for the National League East, and then whoever doesn't win it is going to be probably the top dog for the wild card spot. The Braves are about 10 games out, I believe, from the Mets, so they have a long way to go. But it's just the Mets and the Phillies, they both are very strong teams with issues at with injuries. I mean, just last night for the Mets, Griffin Canning, it looks like he suffered a pretty bad injury. It was one of those non-contact injuries where they're actually worried about his Achilles. And if that happens to be the case, well, then goodbye Griffin Canning, who's been one of their top pitchers all season long. So, but I mean, even with that being said, though, the Mets have pretty much been able to overcome all those issues. And then the Philadelphia Phillies, they've had their up and down moments, but right now they're looking pretty good, and they're playing pretty solid baseball. And I just look at the Mets and the Phillies just trading back and forth all the way, probably until the last week of baseball for this National League East. And then just catching up on some stats leaders, right now leading in batting average is Aaron Judge, batting a .361. Leading in home runs right now, Cal Raleigh, 32 home runs. He's also leading the league in RBI with 69 RBI. And then with the pitchers, right now leading the league with 10 wins is Max Fried from the New York Yankees. Leading the league with 22 saves is Carlos Estevez from the Kansas City Royals. And with the lowest ERA in the league is starting pitcher Hunter Brand with those Houston Astros I was warning you about with the 1.74 ERA. He is one reason why this Astros team has really started to get going. So if he's able to keep playing the way he's playing, like I said, look out for the Houston Astros. All right. Moving on to the top five this week, you know, since SGA won the NBA League MVP and the NBA Finals MVP, and as I said, that's pretty rare to do. I should have written down how many times it's happened in league history. I believe, just offhand, I believe it's happened 11 times. By the way, multiple guys have won multiple times before. As a matter of fact, number one has won it the most amount of times, which is one of the reasons why he's number one. But I decided to do top five NBA MVP / finals MVP seasons. It's basically who had the most dominating regular season plus a dominating NBA finals. I mean, obviously, you had a fantastic season if you won both of them. But since there was so many to choose from, I had to whittle it down. And that's kind of what I did. I combined both of them to basically create my top five. So we're beginning with number five on my top five NBA MVP / NBA Finals MVP seasons, beginning with one of my favorite players of all time, Tim Duncan. His 2003 season with the San Antonio Spurs was actually his second MVP in a row, because he actually won the MVP as well in 2002. But in 2003, that was probably Tim Duncan's greatest season of all time, is his 2003 season. He just absolutely owned and obliterated everyone in this entire season. As a matter of fact, he played 81 of the 82 games in this NBA season, and he averaged 23.3 points per game, 12.9 rebounds per game, 3.9 assists per game, and 2.9 blocks per game. The dude just was everywhere on the court. You could not get past Timmy, and you could not stop Timmy. The dude was on fire. And then once he hit the NBA Finals versus the New Jersey Nets, they won in 6 games, 4-2. He averaged 24.2 points per game, 17 rebounds per game, 5.3 assists per game, 1 steal per game, and 5.3 blocks per game. The dude was just a stat machine and just absolutely ran the league in the 2003 season. Then at number 4 in my top 5 NBA MVP and / finals MVP seasons, Shaquille O'Neal with the Los Angeles Lakers in 2000 season. He led the league in scoring in the regular season, 29.7 points per game, and he just was a monster. As a matter of fact, this was probably Shaq's greatest season of his entire career as well. I mean, Shaq could not be stopped, period. I mean, just his size alone is really difficult to cover. But what Shaq doesn't get credit for is how athletic he was. I know it's hard to say that about a dude who weighed well over 300 pounds and just kind of looked like just a big dude standing there. Nah, Shaq was a beast. He was a monster, and he was as athletic as hell. And in this 2000 season, he could not be stopped ever. You could put 5 dudes in the paint and he was going to get to the bucket, and he always fucking did. And then in the NBA Finals versus the Indiana Pacers, they won in 6 games, 4-2. He averaged 38 points per game, 16.7 rebounds per game, and 2.7 blocks per game. Shaq could not be stopped. I mean, the dude had like 60 and 50 point games. He was a monster, and this year 2000 season was amazing for Shaq. Then at number 3 on my top 5 NBA MVP / finals MVP, Larry Bird. 1986 season for the Boston Celtics season. This was also Larry Bird's just greatest season overall. In the regular season, he averaged 25.8 points per game, 9.8 rebounds per game, and 6.8 assist rebounds per game. So he almost averaged a triple-double per game. And also, what was most impressive about this Boston Celtics team, at home in the regular season, they went 40-1, and in the postseason, they went 10-0. So they only had one loss the entire season at home. So that's just how dominating Larry Bird and the Boston Celtics were in this season. And then in the NBA Finals versus the Houston Rockets, they won in 6 games, 4-2. As a matter of fact, Larry Bird was instrumental in getting them this win, particularly in Game 6. But, I mean, obviously the entire NBA Finals, since he won the MVP. But he averaged 24 points per game, 9.6 rebounds per game, and 9.5 assists per game. So also a triple-double per game is what he almost averaged there. But just an amazing season from Larry Bird. Then at number 2 on my top 5 NBA MVP / finals MVP seasons, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was Lou Alcindor at this time. This was only his second season in the league when he was with the Milwaukee Bucks in 1971. He was a monster. Now, everybody knew Kareem was going to be amazing once he hit the league. He was Rookie of the Year, so he's coming off of a fantastic year. And in this season, he would average a paltry 31.7 points per game and 16 rebounds per game. What a fucking monster year he had in his second year. Then they would go on to beat the Baltimore Bullets in the NBA Finals, swept them on out 4-0, and in that NBA Finals, he would average 27 points per game and 18.5 rebounds per game, and just one of the most dominating seasons in his second year in the NBA. But at number 1 on my top 5 NBA MVP / finals MVP seasons, there could be nobody else at number 1, because this dude won it 4 times. So I had to figure out the one to choose from, but he did it 4 fucking times, and nobody has ever done that in the history of the league, and that is Michael motherfucking Jordan. I chose his 1998 season with the Chicago Bulls. I could have chosen from his 96 season, his 92 season, and 91 season, because those were all the other three seasons he won the NBA League MVP and the NBA Finals MVP. But I chose this season because this is technically Michael Jordan's last hurrah. It was his last season. Obviously, he would unretire again and go to the Washington Wizards. But if you ask me, this was it. This is how Michael Jordan went out. And it was on about the highest note you possibly could go out on. First of all, dude played all 82 games in this season. All 82 games. He also led the league in scoring for his 10th and final time in his entire career. But in his last season with the Chicago Bulls, which ended up being basically his last legitimate season as an NBA player, he averaged 28.7 points per game, 5.8 rebounds per game, 3.5 assists per game, and 1.7 steals per game. And he just obliterated everybody. And he just made everybody look so dumb. And he was basically at the prime of his career, but not really. I mean, 98 Jordan probably wasn't his prime era, but I mean, this, what a way to go out. And they would play in the finals, of course, against the Utah Jazz in one of probably the greatest. I mean, real talk, it might be Michael Jordan's greatest finals performance. I didn't really go in depth with the other three. To me, I really chose this one because, like I said, this is a great way to go out. He literally went out on top with this team. In the 98 season. So that's really why I selected it. Plus, I mean, he obliterated the league numbers-wise, and then, of course, in the NBA Finals, and it was, to me, probably the greatest NBA Finals. Out of all six of Jordan's performances, I'd say this was definitely, if not one of the top ones. But for me, probably number one. But they won in six games, of course, 4-2, and he would average 33.5 points per game and 1.8 steals per game. And that's just how you go out. So four out of the six times Michael Jordan went to the NBA Finals, you know, he won all six of them. But four out of the six times, he won league MVP and Finals MVP. That is just the domination of Michael Jordan and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar of this game is just absolutely insane. But especially Michael Jordan. I mean, four times to do that. That is just nuts. That hasn't even come close. I mean, LeBron has two. He's done it twice when he was with the Miami Heat. He won NBA League MVP and Finals MVP. But it's probably not going to happen anytime soon. It kind of feels like. But that's just the utter domination of Michael Jordan, really. That's just one of the reasons why a lot of us believe he is the GOAT. Or one of the GOATs. Now, of course, I've already said it. Kareem, to me, is the GOAT. But you could easily make the same amount of arguments for Michael Jordan that you can Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, in my opinion. But Michael Jordan has a major leg up on everybody in this category of NBA MVPs plus NBA Finals MVPs in the same season. All right, y'all. Enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.